Welcome back to episode 263. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. I was in Seattle for the weekend at a friend's wedding, yes. And I was able to see Seattle downtown firsthand. It's kind of shocking. And noticed that the vast majority of people live in Seattle, I mean, millions, it's a giant city, you know, the core of it has been lost, you know, from the area where the autonomous zone was going out quite a ways, but the peripheries are still holding pretty strong. I mean, there's still commerce, people are, you know, walking the streets, trying to do business. And I talked to a couple of them and they actually had the idea that they were going to try to retake the center of the city. I mean, this was actually a spontaneous thought from someone I just struck up a conversation with. So, I think there is hope. And the good news there is so much of it is intact. You know, it's not like it's 90% of the city is, you know, just the fentanyl brigade horror story. It's just the other way around. It's really just a small area relative to the giant size of Seattle. That is, basically too demented for, you know, normal people to enter.
So if they were to take the center of the city back, would these be MAGA forces that Joe Biden spoke about last week?
I think it would be exactly that group.
Uh-oh. So these are the people that are attacking law and order, the right to vote, or civil liberties, and, you know.
I don't know about that, but I think it would be the other way around.
I guess they do try to take the city back. Merrick Garland have to send in his goons to investigate him for civil rights violations.
Yeah, the country is in strange times. The strangest thing that has occurred or come to my attention is this Illinois law which eliminates cash bail for violent offenders. It's called, and of course it has a Orwellian title, the Safety Act is what it's called. And basically it, you know, one internet wag said it should be called Kill Whitey Act, you know, because of the, you know, how they, that person sort of understood what would take place as a result of this. But I don't think that's really correct. I think that the vast majority of violence, and when you go in through this thing, you can see just how much violence is going to occur. The vast majority will be, as normal, will be perpetrated by Blacks against Blacks because...
Well, just the geographic location opportunity, yeah.
The geographical proximity, and because without bail, I mean, these people will just go right back into the streets after they've been processed for a few minutes in the police station, if even that much. But, I haven't read it, so I have read synopsis of it and articles about it. I intend to read it, but it's 800 pages, so I need, you know, I need a few minutes. But anyway, it has like they have 12 they've identified as non-detainable. So this is, think about this. This is not just, you know, they're not going to be locked up and required to go through a legal process to come up with a bail. But these are non-detainable offenses. And the one that caught my eye immediately is second-degree murder. Now, second-degree murder is the most common charge brought against murder suspects. Because first-degree, you know, you have to demonstrate there was premeditation typically, mm-hmm. and that's kind of complicated. So they usually bring, you know, the perp or the suspect in under second-degree. And then they at the during the bail process, during that situation, they can put him and they can incarcerate them, and then they can go through the process to determine what level, you know, degree. But anyway, under the Safety Act, which incidentally isn't in effect now, it will go into effect January 1, so there's time to get out of the state of Illinois, because this isn't insane. This is not a city of Chicago, you know, sort of new ordinance. This is a law created by the legislature and signed by the governor of the state of Illinois.
Who is Jay Pritzker, right? Yeah.
Pritzker, yeah. There's a great picture of him in his just fat, hideous face with a smile that looks like it's, you know, something in a Batman movie. And he is holding up the bill, surrounded by strictly by black Illinois state legislatures who are all making the black power fist. So this is, you know, healing the racial divides. Anyway, and so this law will end the requirement of setting cash bail for second degree murder, aggravated battery, arson, any kind of drug induced homicide, which is interesting, kidnapping, burglary, robbery, intimidation, aggravated DUI, and also fleeing and eluding. They can't really stop you from fleeing now, or in any case, it's much more complicated. But the the thing that all of this, of course, is just insane, and obviously will create a much more violent situation. But the part of it that is new, which is kind of like perhaps maybe just an aspect too far, is that you cannot be removed from trespassing on private property.
So what is about trespassing that they don't understand?
Well, the part they don't understand is that it is no longer, basically it's no longer illegal, because they can give the individual, someone comes and occupies your premise, your backyard, you know, illegally, that individual can be given a ticket, but cannot be removed. So this kind of is a new form of private property, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's just...
Is this done to facilitate, like, protesting, Black Lives Matter style?
You know, it's really interesting as to what is the rationale behind this idea. Basically, it's just a way to prevent police activity from occurring. I mean, it's there is a DA who is in a county north of Chicago, and he said that this act will destroy the city and the state of Illinois. His name is James Glasgow, and he described it as the end of days.
So what would happen if a group of, say, right-wing protesters were to assail the property of Jay Pritzker or one of his many houses?
I think his bodyguards would probably take him out. But I mean, see, this is that, you know, Tim, that's actually not even a theoretical question, because since the law, if at the very least, complicates to a degree where it's nothing is clear what the rights of private property are. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a new form of private property. It's a new way of understanding it. So the question is, to me, is that what then are the way, what happens to self-defense now, right? I mean, say you make the decision that the person who has come into your property is dangerous. What are you supposed to do at this point? And so my point is, you know, everyone can see this is crazy. Everyone can understand that Glasgow is right when he says this is going to destroy Chicago for sure. I mean, the city will not be able to function with this law in effect, and the state will follow shortly thereafter. But the question is, well, I mean, how do you get out of the state? I mean, what can you do? Because it really, you know, you have to, like, I won't go into Glasgow's whole kind of screed on this, but, you know, he points out that just really this is almost an end to policing as we know it. It sort of creates a relationship between the perpetrator and the police of, I would describe it as negotiation. You know, the police will, you know, say, well, you shouldn't be in this person's backyard staring at his children. And the guy says, no, this is just what I want to do. And the cop says, well, I'm going to have to cite you with a ticket. And then that's fine. But you don't have to leave. Right. So now what do you do if you're the father? You know, so my point is just that, look, Tim, this is not anything other than an invitation to civil war. That's really what this
is. Well, also with the bail thing, they're taking these offenses, which are violent offenses, kidnapping, second-degree murder, fleeing. These are also associated with other crimes. Is they're going to, people who are, the police happen to catch, will have to release, and it'll be a catch and release program where they go out and they commit other crimes. This is interesting because recently we've seen a couple of two high-profile crimes occur just in the city of Memphis, which is has one of the highest, I think the highest per capita murder rate in the world, has a 65% black population. And you had this character, Ezekiel Kelly, who was melanin rich. And he went on, I guess he streamed this on Facebook, I believe, was the platform, when he went on a shooting spree, allegedly targeting, I think, desiring to target white folk. And of course, he has a long criminal record, including attempted first degree murder. And this is someone who never should have been, once caught, never should have been released. And then also we have this kidnapping, rape and murder of this heiress, as they're calling her, heiress to this hardware fortune. Her family, she comes from a pedigreed family from Memphis, Tennessee. She moved back there with her family. And I guess she decided, she routinely went jogging at 4:30 in the morning. From what I understand, it isn't a bad part of town, but it, like anything, it's adjacent to a bad part of town. And she ended up being kidnapped, assaulted, raped and murdered by this 38-year-old career criminal. I think his first run-in with the law when he was 11. And I think his first kidnapping case occurred when he was 14. At 16, he was convicted. He was in prison for 20 years. He was released early because of equity a couple of years ago, and he comes out and he commits this heinous crime. These are, again, two individuals never should have been allowed back on the street. I saw a thing today where 1,400, Cleotha Abston Henderson is his name. He is, of course, a long rap sheet. There was a, I think there's a planned event in Memphis where 1,400 runners will complete Eliza Fletcher's run as a statement to raise awareness. I guess these 1,400 runners hope to get to, raise awareness of what? I don't know.
A good question.
Awareness of what? Black crime? No, not that. It's that women's rights. So this now also, so it's toxic masculinity. It's a feminist issue here now. Nothing to do with the obvious issue, which is, of course, what we're talking about is this black crime. And a lot of these measures, these laws that are being passed, the police stand down the past 2 years, we witnessed, with the summer of George Floyd and all that, is sort of unleash black terror on the country. And so we've had, of course, with all this stuff, we've had this huge explosion in crime, largely driven by black crime, and still the Democrats come and they propose what gun control laws, they're still persisting or demanding. You'd think they might have changed their, in fact, some have with them. A lot of them have dropped to defund the police, but there's still this push to, you know, create no cash, no bail, these things. So these criminals, once they're charged and caught, are released and they commit other crimes. And now the crime seems to be spilling out into the white suburbs, which may catch some attention. We're seeing that around Chicago, some of the nice suburbs of Chicago. So the crime rate is spreading. I know here locally, we've had a couple of incidents of robberies occurring where there never were any robberies. And it coincides, A, with the development of mass transit, which gives, of course, the offenders a quick getaway. Whenever you have a mall next to a new subway, you have an increase in crime if the mall, you know, will feed people from the inner city into this area because it creates opportunity. And so now you have that, and it doesn't take too long for a mall to be killed if there's incidents, crime and these things. So you know. But yeah, so yeah, you've had this huge increase because there's basically there's been a de-incarceration policy in place for past 5-6 years. That was what preceded that was an incarceration policy, which was largely successful because it put these offenders in jail. And that's why the crime rate dropped. That's what happened in New York City with the Giuliani period, where you have the broken window policy. It was first, I think, proposed by Chief of Police Bratton as a theory. I think James Q. Wilson's theory that if you enforce the other laws like trespassing, you know, fare, you know, people jumping the turnstile and skipping the fare on the subway, or, you know, policing broken windows, that's what it comes from, is you will have a significant impact on violent crime because the very people doing these lesser crimes are the people committing the violent crime. Good example, if you do enforce laws or, you know, prevent people from skipping the fares on subways and jumping the turnstile, these are, of course, many of these people are the same youths who will go on to rob and rape and commit murder on the subway. So you have that effect. You had this stop and frisk policies in New York City, which were very successful, although maybe so-called super libertarians, at least opposing of super libertarians, ACLU and such, were opposed to it because of the questions regarding the Bill of Rights and these things. But basically, the police would profile certain people, and of course, a lot of these would be Black and Hispanics who fit the role, fit the part, so to speak, and they would stop and frisk them, and it would prevent crime. But that some people saw that as harassment, but it did have a significant impact on crime. They stopped doing it. You had a big increase in crime. The thing here is the Bill of Rights, our civil liberties, all these procedural rights that we presume to have, believe we have, and the ability to have presumption of innocence and these things vis-a-vis the cops, is based on the idea that the community, the people in that community, are themselves self-governing and discipline and respect that. These libertarian ideas work if people respect them. If individuals respect the non-aggression principle, then you can have these things. But if you have a community where a sizable or a significant portion of that community are simply lawless, those things simply you cannot have. And so you have to have somewhat of a police state or authoritarian state. And that's how sort of a Babel like New York order was kept. Right. And, you know, that coincides also with, you know, what they've done with the culture and these things. There was in the 60s and 70s that you're old enough to have witnessed it. I remember the 70s is sort of their reaction to it with the Death Wish movies and the Clint Eastwood, Harry Callahan movies. So sort of the popular culture's reaction to the crime wave that was afflicting these cities. Of course, this came right after the civil rights, so-called integration and these things. And so it was associated with that with the sort of the liberal policies regarding crime, thinking that it was now time for the government not just to crack down on crime, but to stand down a little bit and address the root causes of crime and bring in all these social programs that the Great Society offered. And it was the idea that what caused crime among Blacks was poverty. The only problem with that is in the 60s and 70s, the material conditions of Blacks improved greatly, but the crime rate exploded. The same thing applies today. So it's not a material issue, it's a moral issue. Whereas in the 1930s and 40s, because of, I guess, the public sensibilities and overall general healthier public morality, but also a sense of restriction and fear among the Black minority that if they did act up, there'd be retribution. That's just a reality. Now there is no fear of retribution. We saw that in one of the functions of the summer of 2020 and the much encouraged riots by the authorities, by our current Vice President Kamala Harris and our president, where they encourage these things. They encourage riots. They call them mostly, you know, the media called them fire, mostly peaceful protests. They called them justice protests. We're just looting operations and crime. They encouraged all this. So now you have this huge explosion in the homicide rate, the crime rate. And what do? They're proposing, they persist in proposing these laws like in Illinois. Where they're denying people protection of the laws, or denying protection of their property, and they're creating an anarcho-tyrannical situation. And
Tim, I was just going to say, I have a question. I mean, okay, first, how do you think like the tranche of society which produces most of the violent crime, which let's not beat around the bush, it's these young non-family-based Black males, right? Something like between 14 and 25. Okay. So how do you think that group, what would be their response to the safety laws? That is the name. I mean, don't you think that they will look at these new freedoms basically as just the green light to go ahead with illegal activities of all kinds, right?
Yes, of course.
How else could they? How else could anyone in that world think anything other than that?
Well, at the same time, you have like the McMichaels who are defending their property, defending the community's property from robbery. That's something that we don't hear about, is that community is being plagued by robbery because it's adjacent to a large Black community. And the police told them to police it, to do a citizen's a patrol thing. And they did it. And of course, initially, of course, when it happened, it was clear that Ahmaud Arbery had actually brought upon his own demise by attacking one of the Michael's son with he was the one holding the shotgun. And he ran at him and pulled the shotgun toward him, thus effectively pulling the trigger and killing him. But he was a career criminal, a hood, and he'd been, they had him on videotape casing the places. There's been robberies at various construction sites, and he was known. He was called as the jogger because he'd run in stores and run out with stuff. But they're prosecuted for doing the very thing that is necessary when the police stand down. In fact, the police told them to do that. What's really depressing is that the community sort of abandoned them at Michael's. So there's no sense of community down there when they're doing simply protecting their neighborhood.
Well, good point. What I think is happening is clear. I think they're setting up a gladiatorial pit.
Yeah.
We've talked about this for years and what I will say is, if you put into the minds or into the lives of individuals, this tranche we were just talking about who will now be given the green light, that the police aren't going to stop you, basically. That's how they're going to interpret the end of the bail laws. Okay, my question is, you put hunger, a little bit of hunger, even the threat of hunger, into this group's mind, and what do you think their response is going to be? You see what I'm saying? They are absolutely, in my opinion, setting up a gladiatorial pit. They are giving them the green light for violence and for intrusion into homes, right? They're just saying, it's going to be a process. We'll work it out after the fact. And now, if this winter, you have you look at all of these different ways you could have problems with the food supply. I don't think you'd even have to have real hunger. I think you'd only have to have the threat of it. And I think you would have grocery stores and 7-Elevens just cleaned out. But then when that's done, no one else, who would be going in to resupply at this point?
Yes.
They're going to have to go out to the suburbs.
And they already have food deserts in these areas because
This is my point.
Yeah.
Is that this has all been established through a very long process, and here we are at the end point, which is the gladiatorial pit. When they brought out the Great Society programs in the 60s, they know perfectly well they were going to destroy the family. When they then brought in the glorification of pimp and drug life to young African American males in the 70s, they knew perfectly well what this was going to do. When they brought in, rap music. I mean, so they have led, and of course, we already done many shows on actually the event we brought about the creation of the independent media, Dark Alliance, where you showed that the CIA was actually bringing crack cocaine into the inner city, right? Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they took a very vulnerable culture that had been on the uptick for 50 years, but it was still very fragile. And they shattered the family. They promoted isolated, pornographically driven males, and then glorified violence. Took away all the jobs, and now you have whole areas where there are no families, where the children aren't even identified by their biological father, right?
No, one of the arguments against mass incarceration was, you're taking fathers, separating fathers from the children and perpetuating the problem. The problem with that argument is that most of the people incarcerated are better off nowhere near their children. That's just a reality. Right. Yeah. But Obama is, so the separation of family is only bad when prison's involved. Other than this, it's good. It's liberating, right?
Of course. It's in other words, but they never stopped the process by which they were producing the violent pornographic blackmail. They just kept that spigot on full tilt. They had all this bamboozlement around him. So
they glorified it. It was like Norman Mailer had spade kicks. On the road, how white people are all, they're all stuffy and inhibited. Black people are free.
So this stuff has been going on for, 50, 60 years. And now it's all being brought to its final position, which is the gladiatorial pit, where they're going to actually encourage people in the inner city to take their weapons, and believe me, they're well armed, and move out and get food, move out to the suburbs. Now, this is why I would imagine one of the reasons why the attorney general of a county just north of Chicago says that this current law is going to destroy the state of Illinois. He can see that it's going to come right out of Chicago, that this will, encourage, violence that isn't just going to encourage it, it just legalizes it.
It's not a legitimate law because it completely inverts what government is supposed to do, which is protect life, liberty, your life, liberty, and property.
It's unconstitutional under just every imaginable, analysis. But it's the Pritzker's plan. It's their, they are part of the group which wants to destroy Christian culture. And this is, one of the great maneuvers that they've ever structured. They're going to take the poor fragile culture that was in the inner cities, develop it into a deranged, violent mass, and then make them hungry. At the same time, you're taking away all the restrictions on their behavior. We're not looking at any, this is sort of like, the sanctions, right, relative to the Ukrainian war, that people go, well, how can the government be so stupid? How can the people be so stupid to not see that there's actually planning in back of this?
Yeah, it's, what they're not willing to see is those who are, in charge, so to speak, are malevolent. I think you just have the right amount of, malevolence and also incompetence too. You can always count on incompetence. In this thing, because you just have somebody just stupid. A good example is if you look at the people who ran the governor of Jackson, Mississippi. They're just there, plundering and getting their salary, getting their government paychecks, not doing anything. And you can tolerate a certain amount of that, but you need people. At some point, you hit critical mass and it just collapses. And there isn't one city in the United States that's majority Black that isn't dysfunctional. A lot of that is because what happened was since the civil rights movement, they've been trained kind of to think of themselves as eternal victims and therefore requiring some sort of reparations or benefits. And basically that just encourages, basically they don't think they have to produce anything or do anything, and there's a sense of entitlement and also grievance, and at the same time you have a development of white guilt.
Entitlements are somehow going to fix what is basically a cultural and sociological structure.
Well, it turns out what happened in Jackson, they just turned flipped the switch, and then in the afternoon, the water's back on. That's how incompetent they are down there.
Yeah, but
they were saying we need $1 billion and all that. It's not money. A lot of people are saying we're spending all this money in Ukraine, which is a problem. But, water treatment facilities are failing in Jackson, Mississippi or Flint, Michigan. It turns out it's not money, it's incompetence. And you have to talk about the people who are running these things, the quality of the people who are running these things.
It's interesting, isn't it? Is that one thing that would really help, the Black communities, would be to develop a culture of self-criticism, where they were really looking for the best from themselves, and there was no excuses, and would they would get rid of anyone who failed the competency.
Well, that challenges the heroic civil rights narrative.
You know? But you see, it's just the opposite. The culture they've been given is just the opposite, that these people are victims. And that by reparations, handouts, and acceptance of failure, that this is going to work out in the long run.
There was an article in the Washington Post about Jackson, Mississippi. They were blaming white flight for the collapse of the city, the collapse of the water system, because it happens when the city became majority black and they took over the government, and the city became, life became increasingly difficult in the city. All the white people, of any means, left, and so did all the black people of any means. If the black people left, the higher income blacks left with the whites to live among the whites, because they can't.
Well, I'll tell you, Tim,
all left with the dregs, and the city collapses. Like, so it's still, so it's white people. Well, it's almost like Noah Ignatieff, the Harvard professor, the late Harvard professor, who claimed that whiteness is oppression, and oppression and whiteness. He's white, by the way. Yes, the Jewish white professor. But so in Jackson, Mississippi, they followed Noel Ignatieff's prescriptions. He said to end oppression, you have to end whiteness. So they pretty much pushed all the whites out. Whites certainly had no role in the government there. So they end whiteness and they ended oppression. They also ended potable water, indoor plumbing in the process.
Yeah, it's
congratulations.
They are able to bamboozle through the control of the universities, production of pseudo intellectuals, and of course the media and the movies and the drug culture media and videos, that they're actually able to get like the African American inner city individuals to not see what is just the gigantic elephant in the room, which is that things are getting worse, that in the last 60 years there had been every kind of government policy, and they have developed unique cultural powerhouses like the rap music industry, but everything is getting worse for them.
They created it, huh?
Right, and so they need to just stop and go, why are things getting worse?
Did you hear about the Sony the artificial intelligence rapper?
No,
it was apparently I think it was Sony. They created the world's first artificial intelligence rapper. Basically, it's a computer that creates rap music. I can see how that can be done. It's rap music. You call it music is a stretch. But anyway, apparently they had a contract signed for it and everything, and it was really being promoted, a lot of interest. And then people were complaining because the AI computer used the N-word. So they had to stop it. Apparently... Yeah, I guess the AI isn't, it's okay to say that if you're black, but if you're an AI computer, you can't say it. But he was mimicking rap music, which means he had to say it, right? But they backed down, apparently, so.
Yeah, I mean, the N-word is just fascinating how it, because it's just it's every other word in the rap vernacular, right? They just use the word all the time. But, and of course, they're always talking in their music about the general malaise of their people, it comes in, like the streets are tough, I've had these problems. Of course, they're also just celebrating the drug life that they've, entered into, but they, they'll mention the fact that things are getting worse, but they don't understand that it's just so self-evident that their use of the term is almost like a stamp, a seal of stupidity. That if you use this word just indiscriminately and you are promoting a kind of personality, or you are normalizing and accepting and even glorifying a kind of personality and intellect that is not able to succeed in any kind of real world situation, right? They're too stupid. They don't have the analytic skills, but they celebrate their the position they've been led into by all these other groups, which we have talked about so often over the last few years, but they never just admit that, we're failing and we have to try something different. It's really going to be tough. In fact, if anything, good things can come out of, if there's a lot of vax damage going forward, And this would be something I hate to say that you know, could actually be positive if you started just because that culture needs to just have the means to stop and to do some self-introspection, because they are just going off a cliff so fast. And I'm not sure the time is going to even be available to them, because what I think is very possible is that you will have, I mean, I don't know, what do you think the increase in crime is going to be in Chicago? It's like 1 in 100 people will experience a violent crime. If you live in Chicago, 1 in 40 has a violent robbery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, so anyway, the statistics are just horrifying. Well, anyway, if you put hunger into this mix, I just what else can occur but just a gladiatorial pit?
Well, it's something like a scenario like in South Africa, where it just collapsed. Yeah. I mean, you've had they created the unitary state, within a couple of decades, the country just is slowly deteriorated and falling apart because there's no one there to maintain it. Because they, quite frankly, to the extent South Africa was a modern state, was largely an accomplishment of the whites, the Afrikaners. And that's why so many people wanted to live there in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then they collapsed apartheid, and the system just collapsed, and everyone passed themselves on the back for doing it. Really, they were serving the interest of some of the international mining, like the interest there. They wanted to put more or less sort of take it when South Africa was a national. We've talked about this. It was a coherent, secure government and state, white state. The assets were protected. Now the assets are open up to international finance and capital, like the Oppenheimer interest in it. Harold Oppenheimer talked about he wanted to convert all South Africans into a homogenous consumers. Well, they're consuming a lot, they're not producing a whole heck of a lot. Now they've, like Jackson, Mississippi, their water's not running consistently, and the power is going out, but no one, again, yeah. No. How can you maintain a modern society when you have people who don't have the capability to maintain it, and just meeting racial quotas, meeting some sort of idea of equality, some idiot, it's the same way that people don't want to accept, the reality of the situation.
But Jim, I mean, here you have a situation like in Chicago, where the violence of the community is the primary problem to keep them from making any kind of cultural progress, any kind of economic problem, right? I mean, this is their problem. Now, it's been brought about by all kinds of different forces, right? We've discussed it ad nauseum. But the idea that to address that situation, you would decriminalize, their behavior.
That's just the reduction ad absurdum of the civil rights agenda, because the civil rights agenda looks at things.
What does he even say to, like when you look at the pictures of all the black legislatures around him, mm-hmm. making the black power salute with the fist raised?
Mm-hmm.
What did he tell them? How do they think that?
They're thinking tribally.
Violence and break-ins is actually going to get them anywhere.
Yeah, they're thinking tribally, just like there was the. New Orleans, there was this carjacker who's on trial, and the mayor showed up. The lady down there is a black mayor of New Orleans. She showed up to show her support for the offender. And the fact of the matter is that she sees herself having more in common with the young black offender than she does with the white his white victims, who are the taxpayers. And so that's why one of the reasons why you get collapse under black rule, whether it's Jackson, Mississippi, New Orleans, Chicago, or South Africa, it's all tribal.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think what you're going to see in Illinois is flight. I'll bet you that if the tranche that creates the violence reacts to kind of understands, what this means, this new legal situation. If they get the sense that the police are going to go away, you'll have a lot of people will jump the gun. And so I think the rates of violence and break-ins is going to go up between now and the first of the year. And I also think that, I mean, for example, like the attorney general in the county north of Chicago, who described this as the end of days, right? Mm-hmm. He said this will destroy the state. I mean, that's a very dramatic statement, but it's also one that will produce behavior. So what you're going to see is, like, I really wouldn't be surprised if you're going to see exodus, both black and white. I mean, there are middle class blacks in Chicago.
Yeah, they'll leave with the whites.
They'll leave with the whites. They will just
that's happened in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, so this is like a almost a biblical kind of structure. But
I don't blame them. Best interest.
If there's an intruder in your backyard, mm-hmm. Staring at your children, and you cannot call the police, and then, well, what is really private property at that point? I think that people have wealth.
This is where you get lynchings.
Yeah.
People don't realize the history of this stuff.
Well, it's an editorial pit. This is what they want. They want the whites to respond
violently. Most people think lynchings or this type of thing, they either they read or more likely they saw To Kill a Mockingbird. I know, yeah. I was shown that when I was in the seventh grade, and sort of burned my conscience what the narrative is, what the terms are, but they don't, they'll hear about Emmett Till, although what really happened with Emmett Till is somewhat debatable. He did commit sexual assault, and they try to cover that up now. But who killed him is a big question. They think actually blacks took part in it because they knew what was going to come if he didn't get street justice, if you will. But no one, good example, right now we have Joe Biden still talking about Emmett Till 67 years later, but he's not talking about Eliza Fletcher and the thousands of other white victims of black crime.
Of course not. I mean, he's just a nonstop,
yeah,
kind of shaft film version of history, mm-hmm. where, I mean, it's just pathetic that, but it does work. It is providing cover for what are obviously malevolent acts like
this. It fits the narrative. The narrative, listen, what something like what To Kill a Mockingbird did is it at the same time it indicted whites, but it was the South. So all the Yankees watching To Kill a Mockingbird could pat themselves on the back saying, look how sophisticated and fair we are. Look how retrograde and primitive they are. 30 years prior, because I think the movie came out in the 60s, the book came out in late 50s, movie early 60s, it takes place in the 30s. So they're looking back. And it's a story of an innocent, noble, yet humble Negro charged with the attempted rape of a white woman. It turns out the white woman actually wanted the affections of the alleged offender, which is, again, a whole other narrative. Again, what are you feeding into there? I'm looking back at that now, although it's a wonderful movie. I'm looking at, well, wait a second, this is just a movie. This is almost like Uncle Tom's Cabin. It doesn't give us the reality of the situation. That often, if there wasn't restrictions imposed upon, women were preyed upon and assaulted. And so this is the reality, and we're seeing it now. And again, most of us are understanding this narrative. And funny is they complimented it because basically we could, the North could look at the benighted conquered South as being a backwater, retrograde, and also subject to social engineering. But of course, they themselves are subject to it because what happened in the 50s and 60s with the urban neighborhoods being smashed by integration, Chicago and Detroit and New York and these places. There's always black crime, or Philadelphia, migration was used to chase them in the suburbia and destroy their ethnic identity, where they no longer have any identity other than that of being villains or guilty of something.
White people,
yeah.
White people.
But so we're talking about sort of this, why is it that you look at crime, you would think black officials, the black community would actually want law, and I think individually they probably do like it when the cops are there because it lowers the crime and they can have some semblance of a normal life, with law enforcement, given the current conditions in the black community, any enforcement of laws against rape or theft, murder, these things are going to have a disparate impact on the black community because they have a much higher crime rate. They commit these laws. It's, I think 60% of the murders are done by 30% of the population. It's really more like 6% of the population because it's the males that are primarily doing it. Similar figures with rapes and these things. So I think the crime rate relative to whites is 10 times. So it's 10 times.
I think it's even higher than that. I mean, look, they have been taken to just the worst human place imaginable, you know, and very deliberately over all these years, all these different programs. And now it's funny if like, if you put really, I mean, on the spot policing into these areas, they'd have to arrest half the population.
Well, effectively, that's what they were doing.
Right.
The era of mass, in the 90s, yeah. And all the liberals got upset about it. I remember hearing about it. I remember thinking about, you know, their mass incarceration. And then this is, well, that's why you had lower crime rate. You stopped it, now you have a higher crime rate. Because it's not condensed. The problem, there's a book called The New Jim Crow. It came out about 6-7 years ago. It was by some black lady. I forget her name. But it was basically talking about mass incarceration. This is The New Jim Crow. And she makes this case, well, because blacks are disproportionately in prison. Well, they disproportionately commit crimes. So yes, you're going to get that. You're not just looking at these numbers, you're not addressing the problem. You're ignoring the problem.
I mean, there are 1,000 of these books out, and they all go back to the idea that you know, white people are the problem, and they're all just sophistry. They're all just Bolshevik sophistry, because I have yet to read one of them that would say, you know, the mass incarceration is all you can do to hold on to any kind of humanity in a culture that has been destroyed as this one has by the Great Society program and by the debased Hollywood media.
Yeah.
That's what destroyed it. Now we are here in this drug-ridden, non-family, violent world. And when you have mass incarceration, it's all you can do. Well, okay. Mass incarceration is not good. No one really would, as a human value, would want this. But these books, these pseudo-intellectuals who are really just sophists for the program, they never go into the fact that, well, the reason that you have mass incarceration is not because white people don't like black people. It's because everybody doesn't want to be murdered. Are carjacked, or all of these really destructive behavioral aspects, which have become commonplace in this group because of the program against them. You know, they talk about how, like, the nation, you know, as a nation, we need to get together and, like, face our past. You know, I always say, yeah, that's absolutely right. We have to really start to think about how, like, the Jewish Hollywood Bolsheviks destroyed the black culture. I mean, we can't really go forward until we go into...
Well, they've done a number on the culture in general.
Yeah.
Well, all these black offenders, if you go into prison, whether Clothier, Abson, Henderson...
I mean, if we're going to come clean and go back and, like, have, you know, like a restitution, psychological, like, you know, clearance of all these problems, I think it's a great idea. I think it's just fantastic. Let's go back to 1964 and see who were the sociologists that came up with the Great Society. Who was funding them? Who was funding the show business movies that started to promote the pimp and hoe culture? You know, who owned all the rap? You know, this is let's go back, Tim. Let us go back. And you know what? I think we need reparations. We need reparations. There should be, all of those Bolsheviks should be giving up all the billions of dollars they made wrecking the culture, you know, of the blacks who live in the inner cities.
I'm sure, again, if you survey the black men in prison or these offenders, if you look at Clarissa Abson Henderson, the killer of Eliza Fletcher, or Ezekiel Kelly, their family life would score very low on the authoritarian personality F scale.
True.
Right?
No doubt about it. Tim, I mean, these individuals are, you know, they are not in what you would call kind of a zone of human consciousness, you know. I mean, like, they are just, gosh, you know, they have been, it would be interesting to take, like, just
well,
one
remember
of those,
that videotape from Minnesota.
Their lives, try to figure out, well, you know, like, what, where are the sociologic forces, and who created them, and how did this individual come to exist in this form, you know?
Well, remember that video, the film of those cops? I think it was in Minneapolis. It was a black cop and a white cop, and the kids, the little kids on the street, and there's this 3-year-old black kid in his underwear cursing out the cop.
Yeah.
Okay, so are white people to fault for that?
Well, some white people are.
So-called white. Because
it's the Bolsheviks, man. Yeah. I mean, like, to use a euphemism. Look, there were all kinds of problems, you know, in 1940, 1950, 1960. I'm so old, I was actually in Watson in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I can remember what it was like. But I'm telling you, the culture was, it wasn't even, you can't even recognize, you know, what has become to the black humanity that was inside the inner cities in like the 50s and 60s. They have been just culturally wiped out. And they don't, amazingly, they don't have the capacity to get out of the bamboozlement, because, you know, all of these programs are coming from really a very recognizable group. They're all, the purpose of them is, I mean, you get into what the Great Society programs were set up to do. It ain't very hard to understand it was designed to break up the family, is it? Is that really hard to understand? This was deliberate. This was something that was done, you know, as part of a whole process. And so then if you get, you know, to the point, well, okay, this was right. You start to clear up the bamboozlement, because, you know, the one thing, and this will be the hardest thing for the black community to go through, is a process where they have to like admit they've been bamboozled. You know, I mean, it's hard to do, because they will defend. I mean, imagine like a rap music or some kind of like Snoop Doggy Dogg. I mean, he will defend his consciousness as righteous and say, you know, it's racist for you to point out the fact that I, you know, can't do simple arithmetic and have no grammar and have, you know, 30 children and, you know, and produce pornography. The idea that this could even possibly be something that is opposed to like the future of the, of you know, black Americans. Are you kidding me? I'm the success story. You know, you're just a white person hating me, you know? So this is going to be a tough problem to solve. And you need dramatic kind of cultural shifts. I don't know. I'm in touch with some black intellectuals. A lot of them get it. The people that I talk to, you know, they are starting to see it. I don't know if these guys are going to have any sway.
Well, you have like Shelby Steele and John McWhorter. They'll talk about this. You know?
Yeah.
They still look at the civil rights as some sort of, I thought civil rights was, you know, I think it was a controlled op from the beginning, because Martin Luther King, he was controlled by Stanley Levinson, the, you know, the Jewish communist tied in with the Rockefeller, you know, and the Ford Foundation. The Urban League had been bought up by the Rockefellers, and they promoted the contraception and these things.
And the Schiff family on the other side funding. I mean, it was a Bolshevik project tipped to Stern, you know, there's no way around it, you know.
And it was a way, again, to break up. Me and Michael Jones wrote about this extensively in Slaughter of Cities, and also in his biography in John Gardner Kroll, where he focused on Philadelphia. And the idea would break up these Catholic neighborhoods to use sort of the black for the carrot, or the stick, rather. And the carrot was FHA and a 30-year mortgage, and the consumerism that easy credit would create, which would then more or less alienate them and turn them into, you know, merely consumers who can be easily be manipulated. And but again, the thing is, again, the black leadership is completely bought out. It's hopeless, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah. And they go through the narrative, you know. So,
but Tim, they have the black community has the same problem as the white people. They have leadership that's controlled opposition.
Well, that's
our leadership. Look at Biden, and I mean, look at Trump. I mean, we have the secret society has infested the political hierarchy.
Well, this is the fact that they probably look at Pritzker as a white governor.
Yeah.
No, they should look at him as a Jewish governor, because that matters. These things matter politically and socially.
He should never be identified as anything else, and particularly one who's like some of the family that promotes transgender. He should be identified as a Jewish transgender promoting, you know, governor, you know, from an oligarch family.
Yeah, who made their money off plundering Japanese.
Exactly. So you know, it's
Japanese Americans, World War II.
Matter, identities matter, and when they can hide their their reality from us. It makes their bamboozlement all the easier. But, you know, just listening to you like list the structure of the world, and it's like very clear-minded and accurate. You know, this is what we really have in the United States, and this is our history. But my question is, okay, the progress we can make from here. You know, it the independent media, what it needs to do is to disassociate itself completely from the popular Black culture, the rap stuff, because the way I look at it, Tim, it serves the same function as show business and Hollywood does relative to the independent media. In other words, if the independent media is in any way seduced or even interacting with Hollywood, then it's not really interacting. I mean, it's not independent, it's just part of the propaganda. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing is true for the Blacks. So it's going to be a small group, tiny, of very, very isolated Black intellectuals who are going to have to get together and start figuring out ways to promote the other side of reality, of the exposure of the bamboozlement, of exposure of like all the things that brought us here as deliberate attacks. And then, you know, from there, try to work out like, well, then how do we go forward? Oh, God, tough problem. But, you know, the gladiatorial pit, I think, I'm afraid, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but it looks to me like it's been set up. And I think that sometimes in these kind of, when you get things that are really just, you know, when it gets this dramatic, the exodus, I mean, here's like one hopeful scenario. Well, the exodus will produce Black people leaving Illinois who then can connect with one another and they go, well, what went wrong? Let's have an honest discussion among ourselves as to what went wrong. You know, as Chicago is burning and, you know, Lori Lightfoot is like, you know, in doing satanic performances, you know, on the news. I mean, the human beings need to get together and go, you know, let's have an honest discussion. What in heck went wrong?
Yeah, well, this happened when they started shipping them up from Mississippi in the 40s.
Yeah, well,
put them in the high rise apartment. You know, these guys from the Mississippi Delta emigrate up, and they put them in these high rise projects. I mean, this is the effect, the psychological effect, right there.
They have been used as a destructive tool against Christian culture for 100 years. Mm-hmm. It's just that simple. And they tried to develop their own unique economic and successful middle class world, but that never could quite get a toehold that was strong enough, because they didn't understand that the government was actually, even though it had a smiley face and had all these programs and was giving them money, that it was working with the Bolsheviks in Hollywood to destroy them. You see what I mean? They were just led down, you know, the primrose path, and they thought their friend, the people who were friends, were actually, you know, they didn't understand that they were actually the ones destroying him. So now the gladiatorial pit is set up. I just don't know what to say. I've been, you know, like I have like friends of mine who live in Illinois, and I talk to them, and what can you say to them? I just say, get the hell out, you know. I do not see how is this going to work? Isn't it? Don't you think, honestly, that it will? It's close now. I mean, if Chicago started to head out into the suburbs, it would already be an exodus. But you want to leave before, you know, you're actually being driven out at the point of a gun. So I don't see how from this point till the first of the year, what can you do but leave? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? What the hell should the people do living in Illinois?
Well, they should start raising consciousness about the nature of their governor. And the interest he's serving, you know, they have a psychopathic Jewish oligarch who is contributing to the demise of the state and his small part in the demise of Western civilization. And that's, people need to understand that much of the political class are such people. And did you see that thing? There was a Project Veritas had a went undercover. I think their strategy is to get a pretty girl to start interviewing some guy, and he'll start bragging about what he's doing because he's talking to a pretty girl. And they get him on at some bar admitting, this is in Connecticut, the public school, the assistant principal saying he doesn't hire Catholics because they tend to be right wing in their values. And he admits, of course, this is a violation of both federal law and state law.
Classic. Just yeah. Classic.
And he's admitted now that he's been put on, administrative leave. There's an investigation. Well, it's obvious. People kind of know this anyway. So people have to kind of realize who's their school systems have been taken over. The governmental bodies have been taken over. This example, there's a certain culture, dominant culture now that's been imposed almost vertically down, you know, it's various school districts, even in private schools. If you look at some of the private schools, someone went to, it's all this woke culture being promoted to teach kids to
it's incredible. I mean, yeah, it's like, it's destructive. I mean, they're past the point where they just overtly try to attack European culture. They're trying to attack European sexuality now.
Well, yeah, at the same time in the conversation came up how this person would also be happy to introduce transgender, drag queen story out of the schools and these things. Mm-hmm. Of course, Catholics would be more opposed to that. So,
yeah, they might
again,
be.
I don't know if Merrick Garland's in the Justice Department is going to investigate the violation of Catholic civil liberties civil rights up in Connecticut. Certainly not paying much attention to it. They're certainly not interested in black crime, its effect on America's majority white population. It is whites are being targeted disproportionately. And that's something that should be investigated, but we're not told to look at crime as in ethnic terms, because again, that would just put impact on blacks. Although that is an important factor in the nature of crime is the racial aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gladiatorial pit and the oligarchs are in the grandstands and both sides have been, and the whites have our current thing is, well, it's good for you to die because of the Green Revolution, right? Yeah. That's one of that's in play. There's also the fact that we are responsible for all of the historical problems, right, with mm-hmm. racism and capitalism, whiteism, So some white people actually take this seriously. You see like the girls in the universities with the purple and green hair, a lot of them look like they just were bamboozled, right?
Think it's safe to go jogging at 4:30 in the morning.
Right, that would probably be the mistake. But, and then on the other side of the gladiatorial pit, the black guys had the line they've been given that, whiteism and has been the source of their problems.
You look at the media. Look like a Django Unchained by,
exactly. That's exactly right. The permission to commit violence against white people. It's over and over and over again. It's so subtle. Denzel Washington movies, right? I mean, he kills like 50 white guys, and the whites are evil. They're bad. But this is just this is steadily getting into the subconscious that. And particularly in the individuals who are going to make up the combatants in the gladiatorial pit, they are very, very easy to condition, right? I mean, look at the kids, and they are children, really, in many cases, who committed all of the barbaric acts that you were describing, right?
Yeah, well, they're not educated, not even rudimentally educated. They're not even given a look how they talk. They're not, if you can't articulate, you can't speak, you can't read, you can't think right.
No, of course not.
And so by preventing them, depriving them the ability to speak properly and to read properly, you can't think properly, so you get this violence. Now, some people say, some groups are lower IQs, there's an intelligence, all that can exist. I'm not saying that there's differences among groups. Now, interracial relationships complicate that because you've mixed whatever. But the point is, even those differences, it doesn't make violence inevitable because you can still improve relative to other groups and make your life better, be educated. You may not, as IQ as an Asian, East Asian American of Asian descent, but you can certainly improve and be functional and be able to articulate a thought and think. But if you're given the type of education, if you look at the illiteracy rate, a good example is colleges now can't even maintain academic standards because if they do, that's a disparate impact on Black applicants because Black applicants, many of them are functionally illiterate, particularly the athletes. So they waive that because they can't read. If you can't read, you really can't think properly.
Right. And in doing that, the rationale is that somehow this is going to benefit them in the long run, when it's just self-evident that this is part of the process.
There's no great leap forward.
This is to keep them moving in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Instead of workaday progress that isn't immediately satisfying, they want this great leap where there'll be equality. Well, no, there may never be equality. Who's to say that's the norm anyway?
Reparations, right.
Reparations, these things, yeah.
And they watch the Hollywood vomit, you know, the Django Unchained, and this sops up the kind of subconscious emotion that swirls around, which should be being harnessed to, like, for self-discipline and, you know, learning, like, things and ways, you know, to be more honestly powerful in the world. But instead, it's just moving them towards the gladiatorial pit. Man, this coming winter in Chicago could really be interesting. I mean, that's a term, you know, but I'm just saying interesting in the sense that the aspects of this plot and how it was all constructed will be, I think, more visible than ever, right? Mm-hmm. The bamboozlement is at some point when you really get into, you know, when they're in the suburbs and it's just hand to hand fighting, people are, you know, the I'm hoping, could be wrong, but I'm hoping that the Black intellectuals and the Black middle class who got the hell out, who represent, you know, the actual future of the race, so to speak, that they will have an honest discussion among themselves about, well, how did those people get there? Because you see what I mean? It'll be too vivid. There's no reason. You can't hide behind a lot of, you know, the books. I mean, movies like To Kill a Mockingbird. So, I mean, all that is gone. You're going to look at real subhumanity in motion. Mm-hmm. And so then the question is, look, in 1960, we weren't like this. There wasn't anything like this in our world. How did this happen? You know, and they have to stop believing in the Bolsheviks with the smiley face, right? The smiley face and the compassion, and we're here with some sociology programs. They have to just see through that finally and realize that those are the people that are actually bringing, you know, the screws that are gonna, you know, hold them down.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, good luck and be safe. It's going to be really interesting times over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, I'll let you go. Thanks.
Bye.